shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Bedtime turns me off and I don't mean maybe. 9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound.
Oh yeah, some Neil. Love it. 720 WGN, Mike Steven filling in for Mr. Dave Hoekstra tonight. Nice to be here with you on the air until 11 o'clock. I enjoy some Neil Diamond. I did not expect the Neil Diamond, but there it is. Beautiful Neil. 312-981-7200 is the phone and the text line. And this is double radio duty for me. I was here this morning doing my show Outside the Loop, which airs every Saturday morning from 6 to 7, right before the Mr. Fix-It show with Sweet Lou Manfredini. And took a little nap, did a little walk with the fam, shed some sweat, because that was a situation today. It was a warm one. And back here on the air until 11 o'clock. We've got a lot to do on the show. So here's the deal. By the way, Dan Long is the producer of the program. Should say hello to Dan. How are you, man?
Good evening. What's going on, man?
Well, I'll tell you what. As Spike Odell would say, it's a pit dripper. It's a little warm out there. That was my favorite. I interned for Spike like in 2001. And that was my favorite, one of my favorite lines that he would have.
I like that, pit dripper.
It's a pit dripper out there. So stay cool, although it's supposed to cool down tomorrow. That's what we're told. So we'll see what happens. But it was, regardless, I think it was a lovely day to get outside. And here's the deal. So Dave Hoekstra, here's a confession. I've never met Dave Hoekstra, but I feel like we were separated at birth. We were born in different years. I'll just say that. We are very similar in that we sort of focus on culture. I like to focus on things that are community-based, so elements that make up a community. So in Chicago especially, we have these really great neighborhoods, and a lot of us tend to stay in our own neighborhood, and we don't venture out and into other neighborhoods. And what I try to do with my show, I call it Chicago's Almost Above Ground Audio Magazine, is stuff that, you know, kind of is off the mainstream. It's off the beaten path. And I think that is really what makes a community a community. And in this case, that's what makes Chicago, Chicago. So Dave, I think, also believes that. And what he is doing, and this is really interesting. Now, congratulations to him that he can actually do this. He can get in an RV. I keep saying an RV. It's not an RV. It's a van. Let's be honest with ourselves here, folks. It is a van that Chicago's very own Tony Fitzpatrick tricked out, and he designed the artwork on the outside, which is really cool. And so what Dave is doing is he is going across the country, and we've given him a microphone, and he is just talking to people. He's talking to people that make up this country. And really, you know, here, look, we hear some things about, I think, the same people over and over again on a national level, right? We know the politicians, we know the celebrities, but really, let's get down to it. It is the people that make this place what it is. And so Dave Hoekstra understands that. He's going across the country with a microphone and talking to ordinary people, which I think is really cool. And I say ordinary, and I don't mean that as pejorative. Everyday people. So business owners, people who own diners. And in this case, we will hear someone in just a few minutes who owns, it's the Cozy Dog Diner. That's in Springfield, right, Dan? Springfield, Illinois?
Yep, downstate Springfield.
And so what Dave is doing here is he's sending us back the audio, and he's sending it to Dan Long. Dan is packaging this stuff, and we are going to hear the adventures of Dave Hoekstra. Now, I say adventures of Dave Hoekstra, and people are going to think, like, he's getting into bar fights, or he's, you know, he's...
Which I would love to get tape of, by the way.
Yeah, no, that would be something. That would be something. We talk about viral videos here. We put that sucker on WGNradio.com. You know, he cracks a pool cue over his knee, and he does the Steven Seagal thing. You know, that's what we need. But he's not doing that. He's not doing that, okay? So just get that image out of your head. Although Dave's ponytail, his Steven Seagal ponytail, is quite righteous. He is going across the country with a microphone. He's putting together these pieces, and he's giving us a slice of the United States. And he's doing this because he's actually working on a book. And I know that he talked about this last week on his show, so this is not a secret. But he is working on a book about doing just this, going across the country and essentially living in a camper van. So it's called, the book is called, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, it's called The Camper Van, right?
The Camper Book.
The Camper Book. Okay, so it's called The Camper Book, and he is going to put this out, we don't know when, eventually.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's still in the process of, you know, collecting and interviewing people, and, you know, he's still in the writing process of it. So it's probably a ways down the road, but...
Well, we can look forward to it. And really, you think about it, a great way to see the United States is to do a road trip. I've done a few road trips. A memorable road trip was right after I graduated college. This was back in 2002. Two of my friends and myself went across the country to the East Coast. We drove all night. We emerged the next day in Niagara Falls. So we cut through Canada, delirious. So Niagara Falls was like this Shangri-La, like, oh, we're in Niagara Falls. This is the most beautiful place I've ever seen, because we haven't slept all night. And then we made it up and down the East Coast. And that was just a great way to see the United States and to eat in diners and to sort of experience people the way, you know, we were meant to experience them. And look, we could, another great thing about this is it breaks down stereotypes, because we stereotype all the time, right? We judge all the time until we actually meet people, even in Chicago. Like, we get out of our little bubble, we get out of our neighborhood, we go to a neighborhood maybe we wouldn't go to, and we say, you know what, there's some good people in this area of the city. So that's what we did, and that's what Dave is doing. And I think that's refreshing, especially today when we hear all about, it's an election year, so that's all we hear about, right? We hear about the violence in Chicago. So this is something I think is pretty cool that Dave Hoekstra is doing. And we're going to bring you some slices of that, some audio candy, let's just say, throughout the show tonight. But that's not all we're doing tonight, because Fernando Jones, who is a local blues musician, he's a great guy. This guy's done, Fernando has done a lot for the blues community in Chicago, especially when it comes to blues education. He's coming by the studio in the 10 o'clock hour, and we're going to be talking about the initiative that he is doing with kids. He has a camp, Blues Kids, it's called, and he will be talking about his blues education for the next generation. Blues, some have said that, oh, blues is dying off, and we don't appreciate blues like we used to. So he is really advocating for blues education, and so we'll talk about that. I don't know if he's playing live. I hope. Look, I brought harmonicas here, so I hope he brought his guitar and his harmonica. He plays the harp, too. So there will be. I would like to see some live music, hear some live music in the 10 o'clock hour. So we'll, Fernando, if you're listening, bring your stuff. Bring your instruments. Also, Dan?
No, I was just going to say, I've heard you play before. You could carry the segment by yourself, just the harp.
Should we just have a segment of like 15 minutes of me just playing the harp?
Yeah, just play a little juke. Give me a little little Walter.
That's right. Oh, I like it. I like it. All right. Because you said so, that's what's going to happen. Also, a local cartoonist, Charlie Krebs, will be joining us. Charlie has done a lot of independent cartoon work. You know, we have a great literary scene in Chicago, and a lot of times we don't talk about the great cartoon, and it sounds weird to say, the cartoonist talent. There are a lot of great people who draw some pretty cool cartoons. I'm talking like cartoons that you would see in a magazine, cartoons that would appear in sort of a comic strip form. Charlie is one of those. He's based out of Riverside, and we'll talk about the show that he's got going on, and we'll check in with Charlie coming up later this hour. So that's all coming up on the Nocturnal Journal. Mike Steven here with you, filling in for Dave Hoekstra, who is, do we know where he is in the United States?
You know, I'm going to try and get a pinpoint location on him coming up here.
We
but
should
I think
really
generally in the Oklahoma, Texas, Amarillo area.
Oh, it's getting real. It's getting real. We should put the old low jack on Mr. Hoekstra. Mike Steven in for Dave Hoekstra. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mike Steven filling in for Dave Hoekstra on the Nocturnal Journal this evening. So happy that you are joining us here, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Very busy night out there on Michigan Avenue. The Naked Bike Ride went by right before I went on the air. That was a spectacle. Apparently, people were coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden. And Michigan Avenue was, well, full of naked people.
Yes, indeed. There were some definitely completely naked people.
Were you down there?
Yes, and I saw a married couple. I guess they'd just gotten married today. He's in the tux. She's in the gown. They came running out of the Tribune Tower with their photographer in tow. Why? Because they wanted to get pictures taken with the naked bike ride rolling by in the background.
That's
Isn't that
be,
just priceless?
I'll tell you what, that's going to be a heck of a wedding album that they can share with the family.
And be so proud of.
That'll be fun.
Woo!
Well, so if you're tooling around Chicago, just be careful because that tends to shut down traffic. And all of a sudden, people who are normally just enjoying the AC, strangely all of a sudden appear on the sidewalk. So that's going on tonight. And like I talked about before the break, Dave Hoekstra is on location. He is going across the country with a microphone, and he is sending back some audio snippets of the people that he's meeting. This was from earlier this week. Dave went down to Springfield, Illinois, in the, not the RV, in the camper van. He went down there in the camper van. He was talking to some people from the Cozy Dog Diner down there in Springfield, and this is what it sounds like.
Tell us who you are and where we're at.
Well, my name's Buzz Waldmeier, and my children now own and operate the Cozy Dog Drive-In that I had for 20-plus years. My dad started it back in the 40s. We're sitting here in Springfield, Illinois, and
well, you're on Route 66?
We are on Route 66, and I was pretty much born and raised on Route 66, just north of here in a house on the highway, and my dad got this property back in the 40s and built a restaurant on South 6th Street, which at that time was Route 66, and we're one of the few lucky cities across this country that Route 66 is still a viable thoroughfare through the city. Not all cities fared as well.
And who all comes here? Like, what kind of tourists do you get?
Well, when Route 66 started becoming really, really popular in the late 80s, you know, it was flooded with Americans wanting to rediscover from where Grandma and Grandpa told stories and stuff. But a lot of those folks have not, they've drifted off, but we get so many Europeans and Asians and Australians and Canadians, and every day there are dozens of people from other countries coming in to experience the great American dream.
Now, one reason we're here is to pay homage to your brother and his love of vans. We're doing a cross-country trip in a camper van.
Okay.
A tricked-out camper van.
All right.
He had the VW van.
He had a VW van, and he tricked it out.
So tell us the details of the vehicles he had. We just went to the Pontiac Museum. But
and introduce your brother a little bit.
Yeah. Right.
Well, my brother Bob was ended up as an old hippie, but started out as a desert-loving, nonconformist rebel. But he had a talent for drawing not microscopic, but very minute, detailed drawings and maps of different areas, and that's kind of how he made his living. And as he started doing his map-making business, driving around in a Mustang, he ran out of room, so then he ended up with a Volkswagen Type 3, which is kind of like a mini station wagon, high-topped kind of, and he ran out of room in that, which, by the way, that Volkswagen is down in Staunton, Illinois. And he bought a 1972 Volkswagen camper van and cut the top out and raised it up and put in a composting toilet, and it had a sink and a small refrigerator. He outfitted it, and he carried his art studio and all of his supplies and his inventory with him as he drove for over 20 years, drove this Volkswagen van up and down Route 66 as well as other highways. I mean, he just scattered himself around the Southwest mostly.
Was he always by himself?
He was mostly by himself, although he was so friendly and so likable, he made friends, good friends, wherever he went, lifelong friends. And so he would, for the lack of a better term, he had either hangers-on or groupies that just, you know, loved to hang with him, and they would travel with him for a while. You know, maybe one or two states, they'd go back home and he would continue on. He never really had a timetable, you know. He'd say, I'll be back on Monday, but you'd never know which Monday or which month that might be.
That's the best way to travel, isn't it?
Yeah. Bob time. Bob time has been noted in several articles.
I was thinking about that driving here on our first day. What's the age difference between you and your brother?
Just about a year and a half.
Year and a half?
Not quite.
Which one's older?
Bob is older, and Bob got the wanderlust early as we grew up, and I was more, intrigued with girls and working, and, you know, I just marched the straight and narrow and had a job and marriage and lots of kids, and Bob, he kept rolling on.
Because, you know, I've told you when we walked in, I wanted to push this van. I mean, it's heavier than the cars I always drive down Route 66 and stuff. And then some of the notes, I didn't take many notes on the way down, and this is kind of a Zen question, but I wanted to push it and go faster, but why? Why do you, you know, you should be in the moment, right? Just travel. That's kind of how Bob was, right?
Well, that's how Bob was, and you know, you customize your van to prepare yourself for wherever you're going to end up. And so he continually customized his van based on where he was going or what he was doing. And since a lot of his whole life revolved around making memories, friends, and stuff, he would pick up souvenirs along the way. And if anyone listening to this is lucky enough to see his van in Pontiac, Illinois, they can notice all of the knickknacks on the dashboard and around the sink and on the shelves of things he's picked up among his many thousands of miles of travels. And he knew the story behind each one of them. A van is, if you're going to travel, a van is the way to go.
Tell the listeners, the van was a template for the movie Cars. Which van was that?
The van was a template for the movie Cars. And since Bob made so many wonderful friends up and down the highway, one of the friends he met was a man named Michael Wallace, W-A-L-L-I-S, who wrote a book about Route 66, among many other topics. He's a great historian and speaker. And one of his friends was in the pool of Pixar developers. So they told him they were doing a movie on Route 66. They were going to call it Cars, I think. Anyway, he said, well, I got the guy for you. And so he introduced Bob to him, and they loved it, and they developed the van character, which came to be known as Fillmore, you know, from my brother's persona and his van and that kind of stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, we on the way down, to begin the trip, we stopped in Pontiac. And, you know, I love Bob so much, I wanted to get a picture of my van with the bus. Tell us about the bus. And then we can talk about the museum, but tell us about that bus.
Well, Bob outgrew his Mustang. He outgrew his Type 3. And he was reaching where he was outgrowing his Volkswagen camper van that he'd cut the top out of. So he bought a school bus, and he outfitted that, and he cut the top out, and he built a second story on it. And that was going to be his traveling art studio home, which had a solar shower, a self-composting toilet, a sauna. But it ended up being kind of top-heavy and not safe because there was so much weight on it. But it was his home away from home. So the great big bus that's on display in Pontiac, you know, that was his home. But he didn't travel that much in it because of the cost of the gas and the insurance, and he still continued to rely on the Volkswagen, which got its third and final engine in 2008. And it still runs, and once a year we start it up and drive it to Springfield, Illinois, and set it up for our Route 66 festival here in Springfield.
Tell us about the museum. The Visitor Center, what's the correct title of the building?
I think it's the Route 66 Association of Illinois Museum. in Pontiac, Illinois.
Downtown Pontiac.
Downtown Pontiac, and the city of Pontiac is so progressive and tourist-friendly. They just welcome all comers and anybody that wants to show up there and do something to, you know, they do that. And so they've got a wonderful museum there, which is free. I mean, they don't charge a fee to go in or anything. And they have some rotating exhibits. And Pontiac has more than just the Route 66 Museum. They've got the War Memorial Museum, kind of like hands-on. They've got the Pontiac Automobile Museum. They've got the Wall Dog Museum. And the Wall Dogs are a group, a loosely formed group of artists who've spent their whole lives painting murals on the sides of buildings all over the country. And so this Wall Dog Museum is fascinating. So it's just, it's really a destination by itself. It takes 2-3 days to see what Pontiac has to offer.
And they have 3 rooms devoted to your brother?
They did.
You saw a lot of artwork.
They did. They devoted 3 rooms in their museum to my brother's. And it's all themed on Route 66, most of it, although Route 66 was only part of my brother's life. But up there, it's mostly themed on the Route 66, because he did. He spent almost 20 years of his life on Route 66. But he, toward the end, he had started moving on to U.S. Route 80, U.S. Route 1, Arizona Route 666. He was feeling other things and wanted to memorialize the small parts of the country, not the interstate highways, but where people really lived and what they did.
Yeah, Dave Hoekstra talking with Buzz Waldmeyer down in Springfield, Illinois. That's where that tape was from the Cozy Dog Diner. And that place sounds great. Lots of cool stuff happening over there. And we'll have part two of that interview coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Mike Steven, filling in for Dave Hoekstra. We'll take a very quick break. Be right back with a look at the news here on 720 WGN. This is the Nocturnal Journal. Mike Steven filling in for Dave Hoekstra. Dave's not on vacation necessarily. He's still working. He is bringing us the stories of the people and places across the United States. And we heard a clip from when Dave earlier this week was down in Springfield, Illinois at the Cozy Dog. And we have the second part of that interview. He's talking with Buzz Waldmeyer as we explore a little bit more about what the Cozy Dog is all about.
For people coming here, what all can they expect when they come to the Cozy Dog? I like the library, the Edwin Waldmeyer Memorial Library. Give us a little tour of what all is in here.
Well, the Cozy Dog restaurant here is, we're going on our 67th year. This is 66 years in business.
Oh, that's ironic.
By the same family. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And we basically serve the same food today that we did 66 years ago. Hamburgers, fresh-cut fries, cozy dogs, obviously. Cozy dogs, the main staple. Hot dog dipped in batter, dipped in creamy batter, fried to a golden brown. Eat them on the run. They're a lot of fun. One calls for another. My dad was a good carnival barker.
What's the relationship on the record? What's the relationship with the Cozy Dog and the Illinois State Fair?
Well, my father introduced the corn dog, called the Cozy Dog, to the Illinois State Fair in 1946. They never saw anything like that before. So back in the middle 40s, he's got the ball rolling, at least in this part of the country. You know, nobody had ever heard of that. And his whole idea was to serve a hot dog that you could eat with one hand and not have to worry about a tray or a bun or anything like that. Just squirt some mustard on it and away you go. And he developed a cooking process that made them really easy to cook, so we could cook a dozen at a time. You know, in the time it would probably take to make 2 or 3 hot dogs, he could have a dozen of the others. So, I mean, Cozy Dog is third generation, filled with knickknacks on the walls, on the shelves, from long ago. And I don't know, it's kind of a unique place.
What's all in the library? Mark Twain, Will Rogers?
My brother put that together after Daddy died, and those were a collection of what my dad and Bob felt were my dad's favorite books. There's a whole section of Pogo up there. He loved Pogo. Uh-huh. He loved Thomas Paine, Will Rogers, as you mentioned, Mark Twain, and a lot of his other, Will Durant. He loved Will Durant's take on history. And so there's just an old collection of his books. And this whole center was supposed to go to Southern Arizona, but Bob got sick and he passed away before he could move it down there. So now here it sits in the middle of the dining room, which is a wonderful compliment to the restaurant.
It's nice. Six cozy dogs for $10.75. What a deal. Now, that's what you pay for one hot dog at Hot Dogs. have you ever been to Hot Dogs? Have you ever heard of these guys?
Who?
Hot Dogs in Chicago. They do gourmet hot dogs. What do they do, John?
Wrigley.
Nathan's is a...
Yeah, Nathan's at Coney Island, yeah.
The cozy dog, the price of a cozy dog in 1946 was 15 cents.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the original menu board from the original restaurant that my mother glued fabric letters and numbers on the wall inside the restaurant.
Donuts, 5 cents.
Oh, yeah.
Hamburger, 20 cents.
Coffee, a dime.
Yeah.
I think root beer was a nickel. Yeah, orange and root beer was a nickel. We used to make that ourselves in the bag. We'd get the syrup and add the sugar and shake it up. And
so you got the last question. You got the arcade thing playing. That's Nat King Cole's version. Is it 66? Out of your little arcade machine?
I don't.
Well, I was going to ask you what your favorite version of Route 66 is, or do you have one?
I guess I don't have one.
Really?
I just, I haven't reached that point yet in my life where I become nostalgic. I'm still busy trying to think about making money and saving money and not spending money, and I think like a business person, you know.
How do you define nostalgia?
Oh, nostalgia is letting go of the day-to-day routine of surviving and living, and nostalgia is thinking about how wonderful it was in the old days when you didn't have to worry about where your meal was going to come from, or, you know. So I'm still not there yet, which is probably a function of just lifelong habits of behavior.
John, do you have any questions?
I do. Buzz, can you give Dave some advice for his upcoming road trip in his camper? He's got a lot of miles ahead of him.
It's close enough to turn around and go home.
Well, I guess the only thing I can suggest to you is that whatever your timetable is, it's not enough. So if you expect to be someplace on Wednesday, you might get there Thursday or Friday.
Right.
That's Bob time. Don't beat yourself up if you're late. In education, we talk about teachable moments, where we have a lesson plan, and we're going to follow the lesson plan, but occasionally a teachable moment comes up that isn't part of the lesson plan, and so the lesson plan goes in the drawer, and then you focus on that. And I think that's what your trip's going to be like.
Yeah.
You're going to come across some stuff that, like, oh, wow, I don't want to let go of this, you know, and you hang on to it.
It's already been fun just even taking this thing back to Indiana, you know, and I know you can speak to this. Interstate driving is one thing, but, man, when I get on the back road, there was a time in Indiana last week I was going down old Route 20. It was like 11 at night.
Okay.
And it was real quiet. I was going like 50 miles an hour, and the stars were all out. That's why I go, man, this is really cool.
Yeah. Did you feel the highway? Could you feel it under the wheels?
Yeah.
Ka-chunk?
Yeah.
Ka-chunk?
Yeah.
Ka-chunk?
Yeah. And that's why I kind of really got what I was doing. You know?
Yeah.
Even just getting off the interstate, it's just a great, great feeling.
I agree. There's something about when you're driving, you're doing that road trip, you get off the interstate, you go into a little town, you know, little area of the heartland. That clip, Dave Hoekstra with Buzz Waldmeier, who is the owner of the Cozy Dog in Springfield, Illinois. Something I did not know: in 1946, Buzz's father introduced the corn dog at the Illinois State Fair. That's pretty cool. And that's the kind of stuff that Dave Hoekstra is collecting with his microphone as he goes across the United States in his camper van. Mike Steven here with you on the Nocturnal Journal, filling in for Dave Hoekstra tonight. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Good evening. Mike Stephen here with you on the Nocturnal Journal, filling in for Dave Hoekstra on this very warm Saturday evening. Glad that you're here with us here on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone and the text line. You know, here in Chicago and Chicagoland, we have some great writers, some great journalists, and we also have some great artists, and specifically cartoonists, and someone who has been a part of that scene for, oh man, at least 30 years is Charlie Krebs. He is a local cartoonist. He is based in Riverside, and he joins us tonight. Charlie, nice to talk to you again, man.
Hey, Mike, it's nice to work with you again, although I'd rather be riding shotgun tonight with Dave Hoekstra.
Yeah, I know. Imagine the stories if you're riding shotgun in that camper van.
Now, I'm thinking if you could get a van, maybe I could trick it out with some cartoon images, and you and me and Mike Jeffers could hit the road.
Oh, the Mike Jeffers, the guy who owns, the president, I guess, is of Chicago Jazz Magazine. You do a lot of work for Chicago Jazz Magazine, and that's the thing. You know, you could trick out the van. Tony Fitzpatrick, who we all love here in Chicago, he did it for Dave Hoekstra, but you could certainly do something like that.
I think we give it a go, man.
All right, let me pitch it. Are we rolling tape? I'll pitch it to the bosses here. Where do you want to go? Just across the country like Dave or somewhere in particular?
Yeah, let's go. Let's follow in his footsteps. Let him run some interference for us first.
Okay, yeah, he'll leave a wake of destruction and we'll clean it up.
There you go.
Fantastic. Well, Charlie, you've got a lot going on, as you always do. You've been working, it's been at least 30 years, right, as a cartoonist?
Yeah, I was pretty lucky to come right out of high school and college and get a gig. And since my junior year in high school, I've been drawing either for a grade or a paycheck ever since. So I've had a very probably rare but very fortunate career path.
So would you say that you are an independent, a freelance cartoonist?
Yeah, I'd say at this point I've achieved that. I mean, I always had a regular job. I was an art director for many years, and I would do the cartooning on the side. Mm-hmm. So there were many cartoons that were drawn at, 1, 2 in the morning, and then I had to be at a desk at 9, the next day.
Oh.
But I finally reached that point where I'm freelance full-time, I guess you would say.
And, I think for some of us, that's the dream, right? We want to be able to do what we love and get paid for it. But really, like you've talked about, and your story is not necessarily unique in the sense that people have to go to the 9-to-5 job, and then after that, they do the thing that they really love, and maybe they'll do that until the wee hours of the morning and cycle that through 5 times a week.
Exactly, and we come across that quite a bit within the pages of Chicago Jazz Magazine, because in the music community, that is certainly the norm, where many of these great musicians, these great talents, they have regular jobs, yet they're still, working the clubs at night, if not, touring the world on their time off.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of music, so you have this passion for music. You are this very talented cartoonist, and you have a couple things going on right now. You've got some shows that are up, and one has to do with something that's very timely right now. The Chicago Blues Fest is going on this weekend, and you have a blues cartoon show, you're calling it. It ends actually coming up this Friday, this Saturday. It's this Saturday, right?
Yeah, we have a closing event. It's a small gallery, and we'll have a small little gathering Saturday as a closing event. We had an opening event that went very well. And it's the Riverside Art Center in beautiful, historic downtown Riverside. It's a new section of the Riverside Art Center called the Flex Space Gallery, actually. Mm-hmm. And they approached me about a year ago about presenting an exhibition of my Chicago Jazz Magazine cartoons. And it was my idea to boil that down to the cartoons about Chicago blues music. Every year at this time, the issue of Chicago Jazz Magazine here in June has a bit of information about blues that doesn't necessarily appear throughout the rest of the year. So these are the blues-centric cartoons comprising this presentation.
And so let's talk about that. And first of all, I should say, again, the Riverside Arts Center, that's at 32 East Quincy in Riverside. That's where you can catch Charlie Krebs's blues cartoon show. What you do drawing for Chicago Jazz Magazine. So it's interesting. A magazine about jazz music has a cartoonist. What's up with that?
Yeah, it is kind of a strange thing. When I met Mike Jeffers right after he established the magazine, He was looking for a cartoonist, and I just happened to be at the Jazz Fair or Jazz Fest, introduced myself, and so we decided to give it a go. And it is kind of an odd thing to develop. What we've done is create a feature that has, like any other comic feature, it just kind of depicts that slice of life, only it's the slice of the jazz life, let's say, or the slice of the music life. So it's an art form about another art form. And often it's just a one-panel gag, like a traditional joke. But then other times I've used it as a vehicle to promote and inform people about musicians and their work that might not get publicity otherwise. So they're like kind of collage cartoons where I depict the musicians themselves and maybe their album covers or something like that, along with a paragraph or two about their about them and their story and their music. And you know, they it ended up being quite a good and popular feature.
And you know what I think is interesting is what you do about getting the stories out there, and you're doing it through these cartoons, because we think of musicians, okay, you think of jazz musicians, maybe we've got an idea of what that is in our heads, but you are sort of telling the story, and you're doing it, I mean, to explain what your drawings look like. I guess it's like if you opened up the Trib or you made your newspaper, it's a cartoon, except in this case, it's all about music and jazz musicians, and I think that's different, but you're still telling the story.
It's like an illustrated feature story, and really I kind of got the idea from the world of sports, because there is a tradition of sports cartooning where they have different depictions of ball players or maybe one particular ball player with that accompanying narrative. And if anyone sees the movie The Natural, mm-hmm. the Robert Duvall character who's like the reporter, you'll see him drawing that kind of cartoon. And I had drawn something like that for the Suburban Life newspapers about the White Sox. And so when I was trying to develop this feature for the Chicago Jazz Magazine, I went back to that cartoon I created about the White Sox, and I thought, instead of depicting ball players, why don't we do this depicting the musicians? And another part of it was some of these musicians were friends of mine, and they were having a hard time getting their name in print or getting their CD reviewed, because, you know, there's column inches are hard to come by.
Sure.
There's not as many publications around anymore, and there's so many things on the Internet, things are difficult to find or pin down. So I did it, you know, to some degree to help some of my friends get a little extra exposure.
Well, I think it's pretty cool what you do. And again, I want to put this out there that the Blues Cartoon Show is it's all this week. So it ends on Saturday, June 18th. It's at the Riverside Arts Center. That's at 32 East Quincy in Riverside. And you've also got some baseball cartoons. That's happening at the Riverside Library.
Yeah, I figure if anyone bothers to come out to Riverside, I'll give them a little more bang for their buck. And all they got to do is walk a block south to the Riverside Public Library. And the library's been a great advocate of my work. They feature artists, and they have featured me a number of times. And so since like blues being a good month, or June being a good month for the Blues, it's been a good month for baseball here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so I took all my baseball-centric cartoons, whether they appeared in the Suburban Life or going back to New City. I had a number of cartoons when the White Sox were threatening to leave the city and Harold Washington was going to build a new stadium. So mm-hmm. I have all those old cartoons from New City and some AOL patch things, and they're all baseball things. So it goes from the White Sox World Series up until now with Joe Maddon and the Cubs, and that's at the Riverside Public Library General Meeting Room on the lower level, and they have regular hours like any library. So if you come to Riverside, and if the gallery's not open, there's the library certainly would be. And that's, I'd say about 12 to 20 different baseball cartoons.
All right, sounds good. That's over at the Riverside Public Library. And, of course, we can check out ChicagoJazzMagazine.com and pick up a hard copy of the Chicago Jazz Magazine. It's all over the place. Charlie Krebs, it's easy for me to say, is a local cartoonist doing lots of really cool work. Hey, Charlie, I appreciate you talking to us tonight. Best of luck with everything. Keep doing what you're doing, because it's a lot of fun, man.
Hey, man, it's great to do a little bit of radio with you again. We had a lot of fun on the old This Is Chicago Jazz with
yeah.
Mike Jeffers show.
And, no, Jeffers is coming in here next week. You know that?
Oh, yeah, I was with him all day at the Blues Fest yesterday in the Chicago Jazz Magazine booth because, you know, when you're around Mike Jeffers, things happen. It never stops.
Yeah, things happen. That's a good way of saying it. I like that.
So I heard that he was coming on your show, and I thought, well, I'll show him. I'll get in there first.
There you go. Charlie, great talking with you, man.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, there he goes. Charlie Krebs, local cartoonist. Check out those shows in Riverside and ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. Mike Stephen filling in for Dave Hoekstra tonight on the Nocturnal Journal. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with a look at the news here on 720 WGN.
2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road.
720 WGN, Mike Stephen filling in for Dave Hoekstra here on the Nocturnal Journal on WGN, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase studio. Dave is across the country. He's driving across the country in his camper van right now. And right there, we heard some music from Roger Miller, good old Roger Miller, prolific singer, songwriter, guitarist. He was on TV, known for Honky Tonk. And what Dave Hoekstra is doing is he's going across the country and he's sort of exploring the sense of space and what it means to be in a community and what it means to be in this country. And really, like I talked about at the top of the show, we talk about what it means to, you know, be an American citizen, and we get caught up in what's on TV and the celebrity and politics of it all. But really what it comes down to is community and the different communities that we have across this country. And so that's what Dave Hoekstra is exploring, that sense of space and what that's like living out of a van for the foreseeable future. He's going to get some pretty great stories. He has a microphone, he has a recorder, and he's out there and he is gathering sounds. He's gathering conversations. He's going to put this all in a book, but luckily he's got a radio show and he could send that audio back to us here at WGN Radio, and we can put that together and sort of give you a slice of what Dave Hoekstra is experiencing. Roger Miller, like I said, we just heard him, originally from Eric, Oklahoma. Well, Mr. Hoekstra was actually there earlier this week near the Roger Miller Museum, and he files this report talking to some folks who are involved in the Roger Miller Museum creation.
I'm June Gordon. I work at the Roger Miller Museum in Eric, Oklahoma.
And what's your title here? Are you director or?
No.
Oh, you just work here?
I just work here.
Okay.
I'm just
okay, yeah. A docent.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And I'm Marilyn Francis. I'm on the Roger Miller Museum Board, and I live here in Eric.
And tell us where we are. We're close to the Texas border. Tell us a little bit about the landscape here in Eric before we get into Roger Miller.
Okay, Western Oklahoma is dry compared to Eastern Oklahoma or points east, and we're 7 miles from the Texas line.
You know, when I've done 66 before, and I've been through Eric once before, and you get in that Oklahoma, you just get that Oklahoma wind. What was it? Wasn't it a John Anderson song? But I mean, yeah. you just feel it. You know you're in Oklahoma.
That's right.
Yeah.
And actually, Oklahoma is one of the places that if you don't like the weather, just hang around for a few days because it'll change on you. Maybe during the same day.
Are you guys from here originally?
I moved here in 1962. I was a junior in high school.
And where did you live before this?
I was born in New Mexico.
And what brought you here?
My mom remarried, and my stepdad lived in Eric.
Okay. Same question. And you refresh us with your name again.
Okay. I'm Marilyn Francis, and I've lived here most of my life. I was born in Sayre, the town over to the east, because there was no doctor in Eric at the time. So I was born in Sayre, but I went all 12 years in school here, and then I went to college, and we lived in Oklahoma City a while, Sayre a while, and we've been back here for 30 years.
30 years. So in the 60s, how many people lived here? How many people live here now, roughly?
Oh, it was, I'd say, at least 1,500, and we've kind of fluctuated from 1,500 down to 1,000 to in between somewhere. I don't think we've ever been back to 15.
Wow.
For a lot of years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So where do people work?
Agriculture's big, and as she mentioned earlier, the oil field is the primary employer around here. So when the oil field is busting, there aren't any jobs. What do we have, 5, 6 trucking companies alone that were oil field related, and then there were service companies, and I think some of them are hanging on even in the bust times, but in the boom times they're looking for housing, and you know, housing is at a premium, and no one has anything to rent or sell.
I'm on my way to Amarillo. What's the nearest really big city to here? Would it be Amarillo? Mm-hmm. Or
Yeah, essentially, there's not a lot between here and Amarillo. I mean, there are some good places to eat, restaurants and things, but somebody was looking for a Walmart, and I said, it'll be Amarillo, because that's the first Walmart there is.
Yeah.
We're almost halfway in between Oklahoma City and Amarillo.
Yeah. And, of course, we have to mention you're on Route 66.
Right on Route 66. And when we were through high school and, 10 years more, Route 66 was the road, because I guess the interstate was finished in 72, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Is it a coincidence that Roger Miller wrote King of the Road and you're on Route 66?
Well, I think that relates a lot to Route 66 and to the railroad, because he was always fascinated with trains, and you think of a young man growing up on the farm wanting to be somewhere else, those trains were significant. And he wrote a lot of train songs.
Yeah. And what line is that? Was that?
Santa Fe.
Yeah, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, I think is what it was. And right now, Farm Rail has rebuilt the track to here. And they are doing agricultural and also oil field related transportation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a nice little museum. You've done a great job. Last time I was through here in 1901, it wasn't here. So tell us a little history of the museum, when it opened, some of the artifacts.
Well, before 2004, Mary Miller contacted...
His wife.
Yes, yeah. his wife contacted some of the people here, and we organized a board of directors and a trust, and then the board acquired the building and got the building all updated, remodeled, and then... Mary brought a truck out with helpers, and she had them place everything where she wanted in the museum.
Because the artifacts belonged to Mary.
She kind of designed it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, she had a friend that was a museum, designer. He designed a couple of other museums in New Mexico, and so he helped her with that. And she would send the cases out, and she would send, so all the contents belongs to the family. And it opened in 2004.
Yeah, 2004. Mm-hmm. And give me, for radio, give me just a couple of the highlights in the collection. What would be?
Well, we have three nudie suits.
Oh, yeah.
One that was designed by Manuel, who was a protege of nudies. And we have, I don't even know for sure how many gold records. Seven. There's six on this wall, and seven of his gold records. We have a lot of the awards. We don't have the Grammys, but we do have a number of the BMI awards. And what I think is one of the neatest things is that we have Roger's actual handwriting on so many of his early writings, and then the beginnings of a lot of his songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The case up front that is kind of new, it wasn't there at the very beginning. It has awards that he's received
posthumously.
In 2011, 2013, and, for the fact that he's been dead as long as he has, that's amazing to me that he's still receiving awards.
Yeah, Mary brought that 3 years ago now. That's the last big thing that she brought, because she does update.
She does come back. Mm-hmm. She still. I talked to her once. She was in Nashville.
She's still in Nashville.
Still in Nashville. I'm going through here. When did he moved here as an infant? I mean, I've got it in here, but when did he move here? It was like 1 year, 2 years old?
Well, his dad actually passed away when he was 13 months old.
Right.
And I'm not clear. Do you know how long his mother made the attempt to support the boys on her own, but this was 1937, and she had three small children. And, of course, men didn't have jobs in 37, so I do not know exactly how old Roger was. If we have that written down anywhere, but I know he was an infant. And then Laudine, his birth mother, was not able to support the children and was at the point of putting them in an orphanage. And her three brothers-in-law each took one of the children. And so Roger was raised here, Dwayne was raised in Arkansas, and Wendell was raised in California.
Do you know where their house was?
Well, the house that Roger actually grew up in is gone. It was south and slightly east of here.
Okay.
And all the buildings on that farm are gone. We do have pictures of the house. Because when I moved here in 62, they were living in town, they being his aunt and uncle, because Roger was already gone.
Was it cotton farming? Yeah, they were
cotton farmed out there, uh-huh. Dry land cotton farming, and it was, you know, right on the heels of the Dust Bowl. So it was a hard life.
All right, Dave Hoekstra right there with the folks from the Roger Miller Museum in Erick, Oklahoma, from earlier this week, as part of Dave Hoekstra's traveling across the United States in his camper van. Some pretty cool stuff. I had no idea there was an actual Roger Miller Museum located on the U.S. Route 66, the historic Route 66 in downtown Erick, Oklahoma. Mike Steven filling in for Dave Hoekstra tonight here on the Nocturnal Journal. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with part two of that interview here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven in for Dave Hoekstra here on the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. Dave is going across the country right now. Earlier this week, he was in Erick, Oklahoma at the Roger Miller Museum. And in this cut, he's got his microphone, by the way, he's recording a bunch of sound and audio. He explores a little bit more about Roger Miller as a songwriter.
Now, I was lucky enough to interview him once for the Sun-Times, March 2nd, 1986. And Big River is coming. I see you have a Big River tour jacket in there, right? And Big River was coming into Chicago. He was very excited. Well, you know the story about Big River. Tell us the story of Big River in your own words.
I presume
the listeners know nothing, but yeah.
Okay, I am a big fan of Mark Twain's.
Yeah.
And this, of course, is based on Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. The play was, the adaptation was done by William Hoffman, who was from Wichita Falls, Texas. And Roger was recruited by Rocco Landisman, who was a drama professor at Yale. And he was a big Roger fan, and he approached Roger about writing this music, and Roger was very reluctant.
Yeah, right.
He had never done anything of this magnitude at once, you know. He had written thousands of songs, but to have something assigned to write specific songs, he was very daunted. But Mary encouraged him, and Rocco wouldn't let him go. He practically camped on his doorstep in Santa Fe. And Roger said after he did write the music that it was the best work he'd ever done.
Now, here's what he told me. He said things really unlocked for him as he paralleled Mark Twain with his own roots in Erick. And here's what Roger Miller said. I had to go back and read the book again and realize there was so much texture to it, and it was so much like my own life. When I looked at the book, I couldn't believe the closeness between his writing and my music. It was written about people like the people I had written my songs about. I was raised by an aunt and uncle on a farm in Oklahoma, and I was always dreaming of running away and getting out in the world.
Exactly. And we actually have a picture up front of Roger with his Uncle Elmer. And Roger's got the old straw hat, and he's got this expression on his face, and it's just my Huckleberry Finn picture. I mean, he looks just like you picture Huckleberry Finn, you know.
Yeah.
Not happy on the farm at all.
So you're wearing the Doo-Wack-A-Doo t-shirt?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask you guys your favorite songs, but why do you like that song, Doo-Wack-A-Doo?
Well, in September, we have a trail run down in what we call the breaks, real rough country, just south and a little bit east of here. And for the last, I think, this would be five, maybe?
I think so.
Okay. For 5 years, we've had a trail run, and people come from all over to...
Is it called... What's the name of it? Is it called
the Do-Wack-A-Doo
Do-Wack-A-Doo Trail Run? Oh, no. When is that?
It's in first Saturday in September.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And this helps to fund the museum.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It, but it's, you know, it's quite something to put on, but we have... Oh, we have around 100 and a few less runners every year. They come from Tulsa, and the man in charge lives in Muskogee, and he's a member of a club up there that runs. And so a lot of people from Oklahoma City and Tulsa, and then just, you know, local around here also.
Okay. And it's, I mean, this is unpaved, hilly, winding. I mean, it's beautiful, beautiful out there. But in September in Oklahoma, it's hot.
Yeah.
Except for last year.
Except for last year when it rained.
They were slopping through the mud, but they all came and had a great time.
Do you have a favorite Roger Miller song?
Oh, my favorite one is the last one I heard, you know. But really, honestly, after working here and listening to it over and over, I think River in the Rain from Big River is my favorite now.
Now, why do you say that?
It's just a beautiful, beautiful song, and... Hearing Roger perform it, he did a concert at the Church Street Station in Orlando in 1991, and I wasn't present at the concert, but we have clips on his bio, and I mean, he was so young when he died, he was only 56 years old, but when you see him in that concert, he's so self-realized, and so, he looks like such a happy man.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it doesn't make it where it's okay that he left so soon, but you feel a little better about knowing that he really was at the top of his game.
He passed away at age 56 in, 1992 already. Wow. It's been a long time.
October of 1992.
Yeah. Well, we all know King of the Road.
Yeah.
Do you know any of the backstory of that?
I mean, the writing of it's a neat story, and we've actually have Shadow box that Roger put together for his producer, Jerry Kennedy, after King of the Road got Song of the Year. But Roger had the idea of writing a hobo song because he had seen a sign that said trailer for sale or rent outside Chicago.
There we go.
And, so
let's put this on my expense report.
he had it. You know, that was going through his mind, but it just hadn't gelled. And so he flew into Boise, Idaho one night, and in the airport gift shop was this little statuette of a hobo with King of the Road wood burned on it. And bam, he picked up a credit card application there in the airport and scribbled down what essentially is the refrain. And we've got that shadow box that has that credit card. It's a credit card application. He did that right there in the airport. Just bam, you know.
Wow.
And then finished up the song that night.
Wow.
And, of course, this is in a number of the bios, but when he, when King of the Road was Song of the Year in 1966, it was up against Yesterday by the Beatles. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, it's amazing to get Song of the Year in the first place.
So he beat Yesterday.
He beat Yesterday.
Oh, wow. We were talking when we were walking back here. I just love his. And he, you know, he's a big influence on Chicago's own John Prine, who does a lot of, you know, humor and wordplay. But I like stuff like The Last Word in Lonesome Is Me.
Okay.
I mean, that's so clever.
Yeah. I'm always struck by them, and I can't come up with any right now, but even in some of the ballads and the serious songs, his skill with the language is just blows you away. Because actually in River of the Rain, one place he, instead of, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da rhyme scheme that you get with a lot of country music, that's not Roger. He would have rhymes in the middle of the line that would pick up, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a lot more sophisticated than a lot of country music.
And then his sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
My uncle used to love me, but I died.
But she died.
My uncle used to, I'm sorry. Take two. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Yeah. I drove in from Tulsa, so I've been in the car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you know about that?
The only thing I know, and again, this is from the DVD bio that we have of Roger, was Jerry Kennedy saying that Roger was in L.A. and he called him to, he said, you've got to come out here. I've got a song that we need to cut. He said, I can't get down there, but we need to, you know, you need to come out here. And so Jerry flew to California, and when he got there, it was, my uncle used to love me, but she died, and Jerry thought it was a joke. He thought he was looking for candid camera, you know, he thought Roger was having him on. And it's really, I mean, you know, as with many of the humor songs of Roger's, there's an underlying meaning and an underlying sadness in there.
Mm-hmm. How many people come here on an annual basis?
I don't know how much it averages out, because in the summers we get tours. We get, you know, we'll get 40 or 50 people at a pop. I don't know if we'd average 10 a day.
Maybe in the summertime.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In the summertime, we'll easily have that many. In the winter, it slows down. Yeah. But we do get the snowbirds both coming and going to Arizona. So.
And give us all the details, like the website, the address, all that.
Well, the webpage, this is one of the complaints we get, is the webpage is out of date. But it's not ours. We didn't put it up. And so we don't have access to it.
I pulled that. Yeah, okay.
For the Roger Miller Festival and any other information they need to know, they need to follow us on Facebook.
Okay.
And it's actually Roger Miller Music Fest.
All right. Or you could call the museum, 580-526-3833. 580-526-3833. Dave Hoekstra right there. At the Roger Miller Museum in Erick, Oklahoma, as he is filing reports as he is making his way across the country. Mike Steven in for Dave Hoekstra tonight on the Nocturnal Journal. We'll take a quick break, get a look at the news here on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Fernando Jones, and I want to wish Ill Blues a happy, happy 25th anniversary. When I'm 99 years old, a young girl to me will be somewhere between the ages of 76 and 76 and a half. 77-year-olds need not apply. When I'm 99, when I'm 99 years old, young girl, bring my clothes.
720 WGN. Mike Steven in for Dave Hoekstra tonight on the Nocturnal Journal. Glad you're here with us this evening, all the way until 11 o'clock. Right now, we've got the blues here in the Allstate Showcase studio, listening to some music from Fernando Jones, Chicago's very own Fernando Jones, local blues man, blues educator. You're a pretty busy dude, Fernando.
Yes, I'm having a good time this time in my life.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. And we also have some special guests here in the Allstate Showcase studio. David Grandi, all the way from Italy, right?
That's true.
Where in Italy?
Milano, the north part of
Italy. Gotcha. I've been there before. Very lovely. Very lovely.
Nice
very
place.
Nice. And also Clay Vigo, all the way from Southern California. Is that
Yeah.
Whereabouts in California?
It's Riverside, California.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So we all are brothers in blues here, correct?
Yeah.
So this is pretty cool. So first of all, Fernando, you today played the Chicago Blues Fest, correct?
Yes, sir.
And was that an acoustic gig, or what were you doing?
We did
there?
The full band. We played on the Pepsi front porch stage, and I had my trio, and then we played about the first half hour, and then we invited our brothers from Italy, from A to Z Blues, to come up and play. And we also had LaShere Moore, who was one of my former students and a graduate from Columbia College Chicago. And we just, like we say, we just put a pot on and had a good time.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And David, you know, you being from Italy, you're also deeply involved in blues. And I think, you know, it's interesting because when we talk about blues music, we just assume it's here in the United States. But blues is something that transcends boundaries of all sorts, isn't it? And how popular is it over in Italy?
Well, it's very popular in Italy and in Europe. Sometimes I really think that maybe it's even more popular there in the old Europe than here. I mean, traveling here in the northern part of U.S., in Chicago, but even in the southern part, Mississippi, Louisiana, I see that sometimes really, really, really there are more musicians that play the blues in my country or in the other country of Europe.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think the blues is so popular over there?
Well, actually, every kind of music comes from the blues. Yeah. So the rock and roll first, then the rock, hard rock, and all the bands, even hip-hop and everything that, I mean, we are listening today comes from those periods, from the beginning of the 19th century.
And it's interesting that there is that sort of respect for the art form, for the blues art form, much so in Europe.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, that's true. And then what the blues is about is something that has no, I mean, limit in time.
Absolutely. It transcends time. You're absolutely right. So tell us why you're in Chicago. I know you're doing stuff with the Chicago Blues Fest,
but
what else specifically are you doing here?
Well, actually, I'm here because of my father that is the editor and started something like 34 years ago, the only Italian blues magazine that is called Il Blues. And I started to be involved in what he did. And after that, I started my own company 1 year and a half ago. That is a booking agency in Italy. So I brought Fernando in Europe. My father before me brought him in Europe in 1990, so 26 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. We met when both of us were younger, let me say. We are still young, of course.
Of course.
Of course. And then we had a friend. Our friendship started there,
uh-huh.
And we continued to collaborate. And now with my own company, we think we are trying to have a cultural and mutual musical exchange between U.S. and Italy and Europe, because I'm also in the European Blues Union, that is something like the small sister of the Blues Foundation that's based in Memphis. So
wow.
Culture, music, here and there, I mean, the same feelings. We have to learn from where the blues was born, but maybe we can also give something.
And really, I think what you're talking about there is a special thing, because when you play music, and this isn't just specifically blues, but when you play music, it is breaking down all those barriers, and you're relating to
yes.
other people on a different level. And it's almost like, and I hate saying it, like you don't know it until you experience it, but really, when you play with someone, especially, or people, when you play with them often, you get to know them on a different plane. And I think that's really powerful, really incredible and uniting. And I think that's a great message. And I know that Fernando, you are someone who is a blues educator,
mm-hmm.
and you have a club, Blues Kids. You do this, do a camp at blueskids.com. We should mention that website.
Yes.
Tell us about this camp that you have been working on for a few years now, because this is really great for the next generation.
Well, we have...
Just grab that microphone right there. Yeah, there you go.
Well, we have blues camps in different parts of the world. It started out here at Columbia College Chicago in 2010. And the cool thing about the camp is it is a priceless experience where we don't charge the parents of the students to participate. They pass an audition, and then they are put in two categories, whether it's entry level, intermediate, or advanced. And we group them with people that are equally yoked, if you will. And it has grown from one campus all the way to Tokyo, Japan, London, England. And we're in talks with some folks over in Milano, Italy, and we're just having a good time.
And started here in Chicago.
Started here in Chicago. You know, 26 years ago, I started Blues Kids of America. And so this blues camp came out of pretty much that experience.
That's incredible. And you know, again, to talk about the next generation, and sometimes it could sound cliched, like, oh, the next generation. But really, this stuff was taught to people now who play it by somebody else, maybe somebody who is older. And it's a generational thing. It's a special thing that's passed down.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's almost it's fraternal, if you will. We're passed on through a brotherhood or a sisterhood in some cases. And it is an oral part of the oral tradition, you know, in Africanism. And I feel honored that my team, that we're able to impact the lives of kids that are 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, and through doing this camp, I realized that even though I'm still considered young, I'm the old man now. You know, I'm the guy giving the advice to the kids, and you know, in the blinking of an eye, there were a ton of people on 43rd Street out of the Checkerboard Experience or Teresa's Lounge at 4801 South Indiana that are no longer with us.
Right.
So I'm, you know, they give you that information, and so you have it now, and you pass it on, and you just hope they don't let the torch go out.
Absolutely. Well, we've got Clay Vigo here. So you're someone who participated in this blues camp. Tell us about your experience. How'd you get involved?
I got involved. I was taking guitar lessons like at this. It's the Fender Center in Corona.
Uh-huh.
And they were mentioning his blues camp, and it sounded really cool to me. So I had a friend at the time, and he kept inviting me to go. So I eventually went, and it's like a really, really great experience. I've started bands and stuff, and played with a lot of great kids, and met a lot of great people, and I get to like come here and play at the blues festival and stuff. So it's all like. It's really cool.
Yeah, so tell us about your experience at the Chicago Blues Fest. What have you been doing?
I've been playing with, we have a friend named Jerry Luce. We've been playing with him and playing with a bunch of different people. And, yeah.
And having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
And for you, I mean, not being from here originally, Chicago is, I mean, we always say it's the blues capital. I feel it's interesting. It's kind of weird because I'm from here and... I fell in love with blues here, and it's like, oh yeah, blues, obviously. But yeah. What you're from, I mean, same with you, David, you guys are not from here, but do you always look to Chicago as sort of the epicenter for blues? David, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
And, mm-hmm. and Clay?
Yeah, yeah.
The same?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it, Clay, about, how old are you?
18.
You're 18, yeah. So a spry 18 years old. What is it about the blues for you?
I really like the expression. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like very raw. It's yeah. like music cut down, and it's like influenced like basically all the music that I listen to now. So
yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's great. You know, there's, I think we generalize like, oh, the kids today, they don't respect anything, but it, I don't think that's true at all. And I think, you know, hearing your voice, Clay, and say, hey, look, this is an art form. That's great. I respect it. I can see that it influences that we're all tied together
yeah.
In some way, shape or form. I think that's great. I'll tell you what, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, maybe some live blues music here in the studio?
Yes.
I love it. Fantastic. All right, more with Fernando Jones, David Grandi, and okay. Clay Vigo. I'm Mike Steven, in for Dave Hoekstra here on the Nocturnal Journal. Quick break, and back after these here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven filling in for Dave Hoekstra here on the Nocturnal Journal. On 720 WGN, I've got Fernando Jones, Chicago blues man here. I've got David Grandi, Italian blues man here, and Clay Vigo, California blues man, all in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Fernando, that's a sweet-looking guitar, by the way.
Thank you.
What key are you in?
Did you get your A-harp?
I got...
You'll be straight.
I got my A-harp, so you must be in a key of E.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to jam. I'll play some harmonica here. Fernando's going to play some guitar.
We just stay right here. We won't change. Let's be a stop. This song is called She's 5'4 and Don't Need No More. Coal black hair with a brown eyed stare. The girl is sweet as a candy store. She's 5'4 and don't need no more. 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 She's 5'4. Real nice shape. Everything's in place. She'll make a peaceful man fight her war. She's 5'4 and don't need no more. 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 no more. She's 5'4". Get some. She's 5'4" and don't need no more. She's 5'4" and don't need no more. She's 5'4" and don't need no more.
Yeah, Fernando Jones live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on 720 WG. And that was a lot of fun, man.
Thank you.
As he passes the guitar over to Clay Vigo. Clay, you got a couple minutes of something you can rock out here? Is that cool?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And you can angle that mic down to get your...
Hey, Clay, we'll just do a little bit of Chicago's Got Everything You Need. You can do it in E. One, two, one, two. I say Chicago has got everything you need. Chicago has got everything you need. We've got a great lake and gold-plated streets. We've got hot dogs and championship teams. We've got soul food and championship teams. We are the city that works with a skyline that's mean. Come on, Clay. Championship teams. We've got soul food and championship teams. Here we go. We are the city that works with a skyline that's mean.
All right.
Bravo.
Man, Clay Vigo on guitar. David Jennings on the whistle, the whistler up
I'm
there.
I'm full of surprises.
There you go. Fernando Jones on the harp and the vocals. You guys, you sound great. And what's going on tomorrow? Anything at Blues Fest you want to mention really quick?
Well, tomorrow we want to kick off at about 11:30 with Davide Grande and his beautiful friends from Italy. And that will be at the Chicago Blues Festival, Grant Park, Cross Streets, Columbus Drive, and Monroe. The Blues Festival is free, and our space is open to the entire family. We'll also have blues concerts throughout the day of pros as well as blues kids. For more information, go to blueskids.com, and we will see you tomorrow.
Love it. Blueskids.com is that website. Fernando Jones, Chicago blues musician, thanks for coming by, man.
Okay, cool. And
appreciate
if kids
it.
Are interested in being in coming to Blues Camp this
yeah.
summer, they can go. The parents can go to blueskids.com/Chicago. That's blueskids.com/Chicago.
We'll put that link up on WGNradio.com. Check it out. It's really great. Clay Vigo from California. Thank you, man.
Thanks for
Sound
having
awesome.
Me.
Sound awesome. Thanks. David Grande, I know you sound awesome. You're just an awesome guy from Italy.
Thank you
so much. And keep the blues alive, guys. I know you will.
Sure.
We'll take a quick break. Mike Steven in for Dave Hoekstra here on 720 WGN.